And we're joined in studio now by Dan Bornay. I'd rather not get immersed too much in the numbers, Dan, but they are staggering. 44.2 points per game with no three-point line.
Right. No shot clock.
And no shot clock.
Right. So you're right. It's one of the most enduring records in sport. I'm not sure it's ever going to be broken. There are very few records like that that will, because of the nature of the record, but also because of the nature of the game now, will probably never be broken. When you think of any freshman or sophomore basketball player at a college averaging 44.3 or 4 points a game, they won't last long in college. They'll be on the hardship list within 20 minutes, and they'll be scooped up by the pros. So if Pete only played 3 varsity seasons, I mean, if he had played the full four, it would have been, yet another year of 44.4. He increased his average with each successive year. And so, you know, if you put him on a continuous improvement regimen, you find that he was obviously built for the corporate world as well.
Yeah, he was going up when he left in 1970, and the team improved during his period. People forget LSU, his freshman year, was 3-23. On the court, and he was not allowed as a freshman to play then. And you were there, the fans would come see him play and then leave when the varsity got on the court.
Right, sure. He was the show even as a freshman. But when he became a sophomore and became on the varsity player, he not only packed the John M. Parker Agricultural Center, he packed every venue he played in the Southeastern Conference. He was the draw. He was the showman. Now, he's the guy that that went into visiting venues and would score 40 to 50 points, and people would pay to go to that. And I think he in the long run helped SEC schools envision a much bigger and better basketball type of an arena. Kentucky was, of course, the standard back then. But when another upstart school like LSU began bringing in these scoring machines, everyone figured we might be able to turn this type of a promotion in basketball into a real fine money-raising type of event. So,
well, the Assembly Center was built largely on his back, and he only played there once, and that was as a professional. And other LSU Tigers have played in that building, and you've been the voice for the last 30 years. But Pete Maravich, his presence is there. The Athletic Hall of Fame is in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. Unfortunately, Pete is not a member of the Athletic Hall of Fame, but his dad was the coach.
However, he might not be a member of the Hall of Fame, but he's one of the few LSU players that have a statue outside of a building.
Well,
in fact, there are 3. So he's been recognized, I think, with the name of the building itself, and of course, the retirement of the jersey and the statue.
Well, but his father was his coach, and there are those who say, "Hey, you know, his dad was letting him score all these points. That if somebody else had been coaching, they would have shut him down. It wouldn't have allowed him to shoot as much." Is there any validity to that?
No, I don't think so. I think the other guys on the team will tell you they didn't feel impoverished because not only when he set the record did he break Oscar Robertson's record, he also had, I think, 12 or 13 assists in that game. So he was not only a record breaker, he was also a disher. He dished it out so the other guys could score. And so, you know, Saban used to say, when you're in a game, you want the ball in the hands of your best player. And there's only one ball. And mm-hmm. to the extent that best player can carry that ball most of the time, you give it to him. And I think that's what Press figured. And I think the rest of the team thought the same.
All right. Well, he died in January of 1988, suddenly, unexpectedly. He hadn't put on weight. He looked good, but he had heart issues. And shortly before his death, in fact, 66 days before his death, he did one of his most revealing interviews with Ben Kinchlow of the Christian Broadcasting Network. And here's a sampling of what Pete Maravich told Ben Kinchlow. And to put it in perspective, Pete had a loving relationship with his father, but his father was quite demanding and of course, made him who he was, made Pete who he was. But his mother committed suicide. And in many ways, he was a troubled and tormented man, but he found Christianity, And he was at peace at the time he died. And this is how he spoke about his mother and father to Ben Kinchlow.
My dad would come home from practice. He would shoot every day. I'd be by the window watching him. And I'd try to go out and shoot with him, but he would just tell me, you're too young. You can't reach the goal. And I'd go back in, sometimes crying or whatever. One day, my mother said, go out to him, Pete. Let's try it one more time. I said, he won't let me shoot, Mom. He said, well, go out one more time. So I went out. I was looking around the corner. My dad said, come on out over here. So he let me. He said, I'll let you shoot, but I want to teach you first. And he put my hands on the ball, and then I shot. And that was it. And from that day on, I took a lot of shots. A lot of shots, man.
Your dad was a basketball player and a coach yourself, and he was kind of like a guy you really looked up to.
Well, my dad was my hero. There's no doubt about it. I wouldn't be in the position I am today if it hadn't been for my father. He was a very committed and devoted person to me, as was my mother. He had a dream, and his dream back in 1927 was to, since he played basketball, and he was a real good college player, and he also played pro basketball, was to, that basketball could be much more than just a fundamental type of situation. And he wanted to elevate it. That was his dream, but he didn't fulfill that dream. But his particular dream was fulfilled in me, because we did have something to do with elevating the game, especially in the South back during the 60s.
All right, that was him finishing talking about what happened at LSU, and they called it Showtime.
Well, Jim, he wrote a book called Heir to a Dream. That was his personal autobiography, and he deals with a lot of what he talked about in that interview, and he also deals with wrestling the demons in his own life, and how he came to deal with that through Christianity, and became a very evangelical, almost a preacher, evangelist everywhere he went after he became a committed Christian. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was in California. He was playing pickup basketball with Dr. James Dobson, focused on the family.
When he died. Pete Maravich was at LSU. You're about the same age, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you're older.
I'm in May of 46, so about 13
months. And he's June of 47.
47, yeah.
And
so,
today?
So he was, I covered, when I talk about covered, I mean really covered as a news person, his junior and senior seasons. So those are the ones that I was mostly involved in. And as Channel 9's sports and news guy, and followed it very, very closely. And was there, of course, the night that he broke the record. Channel 9 was a CBS affiliate, still is. Channel 9 also owned a radio station, WAFB-FM, 98.1.
Which is now
98.1, of course. And it was housed there in the Channel 9 studio. And CBS Radio wanted coverage of the game, as well as CBS TV. So CBS Radio asked me to cover it for the radio network, which I did.
Yeah. Well, and that was January 31st, 1970, LSU facing Ole Miss, right?
Ole Miss,
and Pete Maravich was on the brink of breaking the great Oscar Robertson's college scoring record. Oscar Robertson, an All-American at Cincinnati in the day, and there was great anticipation, and there hasn't been this kind of anticipation since, because nobody's shattered Pete Maravich's record, which was set more than 47 years ago. And the audio is a little tinny, but I think you can hear Pete, and this is from Dan Bornay, talking about breaking the record of the Big O, Oscar Robertson.
I don't really think I can express it in words, because right now I'm not sure. Breaking someone of Oscar Robertson's stature, I think he's probably the greatest basketball player ever played. And I think I'm very fortunate to break his record, because I followed him ever since I was a young boy, and I always felt he was the greatest, and I felt like I could just maybe play just as good as he could, or anything else that I could do all right. But I'm just real happy. I don't really think I took it on the surface. It really wouldn't bother me that much. I think mostly subconsciously I was aware of it. But on the surface, I was just wanting to win this ball game tonight.
All right, that was Pete, January 31, 1970, when he was 22. He would have been 70 years old today.
He needed 40 points to break the record, and he hit his 39th point. And then it was, I think, six trips down he missed. And to this day, I think it was all showman marriage.
You think he was missing
really,
on purpose?
Honestly, I just think it was, you know, he was that kind of guy. Then, bam, he slammed it. So he ended up with, guess what? He ended up with 53 points instead of 40. He broke the record plus. And as I pointed, he had 12 assists, which means he was responsible for 24 additional points.
Most of his games, unfortunately, are not available to watch. John Ferguson, the great voice of the Tigers, was among his many duties. He was videotaping those games, or filming them at that time. It would have been film.
Yeah.
And he reused the film. So they were gone. Yeah. And what a treasure trove that would have been. So there's hardly any video of Pistol Pete when he was at Louisiana State University.
Yeah, there are a couple of documentaries out there that have snippets of him in action. But a full game of Maravich, you know, stem to stern, I'm not sure any of that exists right now.
Well, he left a mark. He came here in 1966. His dad had just been hired.
Mm-hmm.
He took the job after leaving North Carolina State. And if not for that, we never would have had Pistol Pete Maravich.
He would have been somewhere else. And it's amazing how history, works out. But after Pete left, I think Press had a season or two, and then Dale Brown came in from Minot, mm-hmm. by way of Washington State, I guess.
But in 1966, when Press Maravich was hired, LSU had no African Americans, and the previous coach, Frank Truitt, had resigned after one season because he says he was ordered not to recruit African American mm-hmm. players. And he said, well, then I'm out of here, and he went to Kent State. And it's interesting how a bad thing, and that was a terrible thing, caused a very good thing to happen.
And Collis Temple came
a few years later
for Press Maravich
in 1970.
Right.
And by 1981, LSU, when it went to the Final Four, had five black starters.
That's right.
Under Dale Brown. So the times changed rather quickly. But Pete Maravich did face some African-American players when he was at LSU, but none of his teammates were African-American.
That's correct. That is correct.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But then he ended up playing in the National Basketball Association, and he played very well.
Mm-hmm.
He led the league in scoring 40 years ago with the New Orleans Jazz. And by the time he got to New Orleans, Dan, he had spent some years in Atlanta, and he was a tortured young man. His mother had taken her life.
Right. And he was wrestling his own problems, and ended up with the Celtics, I guess, but didn't participate in the championship year.
No, but he blew out his knee when he was with the Jazz and was not the same. But he left quite a legacy that I don't think can be replaced, and maybe isn't appreciated as much. The fact that he almost a half century later, still reigns as the most dominant scorer in the history of college basketball.
Well, when you tell people 44 points a game, average every game, it's kind of like, well, wow, how can that be? But you had to be there. You know, he's one of three LSU players, Jim, who are on the NBA team of the half century. He's one. Bob Pettit is one.
And Shaquille.
And the great trivia question is, there's only one other team
that
has three others.
There are two.
Oh, there are two. Well, give me those now.
North Carolina is one of them.
Who are they?
The three?
Yeah.
James Worthy is one of them. Billy Cunningham is one of them.
A team of the 50?
The 50 uh-huh. greatest players,
okay.
and Michael Jordan.
Okay.
Okay, and Houston is the other.
Houston. Hakeem.
Clyde Drexler.
And
there's another, Alvin Hayes.
From Rayville, Louisiana.
Right. So there are three schools that have three players. And UCLA, with all those championships under John Wooden, only has two.
That's right.
Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But LSU, despite the fact that the Tigers are not doing well right now in basketball, the other little curious nugget of interest is that LSU has won as many championships in the SEC in basketball as it has in football. 11.
Yeah.
But it's been a while, Dan. It's
been a while.
And they've got some work to do with.
Well, they do. I think we have an exciting team coming up. I really am. I'm bullish on the coach. I'm bullish on his coaching style. I'll tell you, if I were a player, the takeaway from the press conference where he was introduced would be this: after every game, after every practice, the tank's going to be empty.
Well,
that means he loves to run.
To put it in perspective, Will Wade, the new coach, is 34 years old. So he was born 13 years after Pete Maravich scored his last basket at LSU. Mm-hmm. And he was only 4 years old when Pete died.
Right.
So Pete's been gone a long time. In January, it will be 30 years. But beyond the points, there was magic there, wasn't there?
Well, he turned a Kyle Palace into a shooting gallery. I mean, that place had rodeos there, except when LSU played basketball. And he took it on the road, and he put on a show. You know, he not only put on a show, he was the show. I mean, he was the show.
Uh-huh.
Now,
Isaac mentions a game, I think it was at the end of Pete's junior year against Georgia, and he was running out the clock, and there's no video of this, but didn't he dribble out to midcourt, takes a hook shot at the buzzer, and it went through?
That's I don't remember seeing it, but I heard it. I heard that story.
And they carried him off the court in Athens,
right.
Georgia, a visiting player. Well, we'll spend a few more minutes with the incomparable Dan Bornay after this pause. One listener, this is Tracy, asking where Pete is buried. It's at Rest Haven Gardens of Memory in Baton Rouge, not far from where we are right now, and buried very close to Don Redden.
Right.
Who died in March of 1988. Mm-hmm. Another listener, this is Hal, asking Dan, who do you think is the greatest player LSU has produced in basketball?
Well, it's really hard to compare generations. I mean, Bob Pettit was an outstanding college player and a tremendous pro player. Pete Maravich, the scoring champion. Shaquille O'Neal, the dominant player. I mean, how can you say which is better? You know, they're all just great players. So I kind of go along with the fact that you honor a whole group of players as representative of the outstanding types of athletes LSU has produced. So I wouldn't pick one.
Well,
Chris Jackson, I mean, he was that 2 years.
But he wasn't quite in their league, but he was a great player.
He was a great player.
He was a great player.
And so, you know, for the time, there's certainly Rudy Macklin. I mean, he was a great player. It's hard to pick one.
But it is easy. You just mentioned them. It is easy to pick LSU's best five, the starting five, if you had to do one, and you just did it.
Well, I think you're pretty close to that.
Yeah. Maravich and Jackson are the guards, and then the front court would be O'Neal and Pettit and Macklin.
And you go back to the 40s, you've got a couple of good basketball players, too.
All right. Now, here's another question. From Morgan, asking how many points would Pete have averaged if he had had the shot clock, if he'd had a shot clock and if there had been a three-point play. What do you think?
Well, you'd have to ask Google for that algorithm. I think you could probably figure it out. But
it'd be in the 50s, probably.
Probably in the 50s, because so many of his shots were just, they were, you know, like intercontinental missiles. And they were at least at the 3-point line and beyond. So, and if you said you had to shoot every 25 seconds or so, my goodness, there's no telling how many he would have shot.
He would have put some more points on the board.
Indeed,
and as it was, 3,667 points in 83 games, averaging 44.2 points per game, and it hasn't been no one's come close. Not even close since then. So he left an amazing mark, and it's good to remember Pete Maravich, who was born in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, not far from where Joe Namath was born.
Joe Willie Namath.
They both came south.
I miss Howard Cosell.
I do too. January 12th, 1969, Miami's Orange Bowl, New York Jets 16, Baltimore Colts 7. Namath was 17 of 28 for 210 yards, and a touchdown. Rather pedestrian numbers today, but that's what made Joe Willie Namath.
Well, guess what made the whole movement toward the merger of the leagues too.
You're right.
It gave that upstart.
It gave the AFL credibility.
That's right. That's right.
So. Well, we're switching gears, and we're going from sports to music in a very big way.